Tricia Welch, one of the co-hosts of this program, known as the Library Lady. I am not being joined by my co-hosts this morning. OB Hill and Emma Jackson are not here, though. I do expect that Emma will join us a little later on in the morning. This is going to be an open phone edition today. If you have a work by or about African Americans that you're enthusiastic about and want to share, please do give us a call. The telephone number here is 503-231-8187. Again, 503-231-8187. This morning's show will be a relaxed show. We don't have an in-studio or by phone guest, so we're just going to be talking about books that we like. And I will say that I am featuring books by authors whom we do hope to interview in the future. So I'll give you a taste of the books, not a whole bunch, but a taste of them. And then hopefully in the next few months, we'll talk in more depth. One book that interested me, because the title and the cover just surprised me, is one called Bitch is the New Black, a memoir. The memoir is by Helena Andrews. This book is published by HarperCollins, and it was published this year. Helena is a, from where I sit, a relatively young woman. She's a graduate of Columbia University. She's written for numerous publications, including the New York Times and Marie Claire. She lives in New York, in Washington, D.C., and she is currently working on a film adaptation of this book with the creator of Grey's Anatomy and Private Practice, Rhonda Shimes. So I'm thinking that she's going to get some attention. The book has certainly gotten attention, and she will too. She says that at 28 years old, having survived a tortured childhood, raised by a peripatetic lesbian mother, and a career as one of the few Black writers for the New York Times, and the only one for Politico.com, she's always surpassed the stereotype of the strong Black woman and been deemed perfect girl by a boyfriend desperately trying not to commit. Andrews offers a caustic and humorous running account of her life, mad texting her girlfriends about dates and career horrors as she navigates the prickly terrain of a modern America, getting used to a Black first lady and struggling to rethink its image of Black women in general. So basically, she's given us sort of an update on what it means to be a African-American at this time, at this place. Black women have always been seen as being strong. I mean, strong Black woman, you know, it just goes together. It's the phrase that people accept. And she's challenging this. But she did say that when she first heard the phrase, bitch is the new Black woman, on a television show, at first she was insulted, and then she decided to go with it, and hence the book. And she challenges whether or not, you know, this is still appropriate at this time. I want to read a segment, a little excerpt from the book, just to give you a flavor. Hold on. Okay, this is from the very first chapter, Dirty Astronaut Diapers. Okay. Copy, paste, and send. Dude, what the F does he even mean by this? When what? What in the name of bearded carpenter Jesus have I won? I'm consulting the Oracle Gina, as is my ritual. But instead of divining my future from a mound of discarded hot wings, G offers me this. Dude, you ain't won shit. He's the Nigerian email scam of ex-sort of boyfriends trying to seduce me over cyberspace with promises of riches in the real world. Problem is, I'm Black and I have a vagina, so my waiting to exhale intuition tells me this shit ain't real. Excuse me, this is going to be a very adult show today, so if you are uncomfortable with such words, I would ask that you, you know, just kind of pull back. And I'm going to pull back, too. In the history of the world, Black women have won approximately three things: freedom, a hot comb, and Robin Thicke. With a track record like that, it's obvious that the catchphrase, you win, is exactly that, a verbal fly trap meant to trick me into letting him back in, into loving him again. All Dex 10 needs, that's his email address or his name on the cell phone, needs is my next routing number and birth date. Too bad my date of birth wasn't yesterday. I refuse to write him back. I can't, even though I've been planning our pretend wedding for the past 6 months. Pressing my would-be ring finger on the keyboard would be even more pathetic. So I'm staring blankly at the blank space in our dialogue box. Maybe we should be dialoguing. Maybe he'll tell me all the things he couldn't say when I was so obviously his and so ready to hear them and so not in my PJs with my hair in a top knot. My stomach's tied up in one, too. Maybe he's come around. Maybe he's changed. Have we heard this before? Okay, this is an excerpt from the first chapter. And I would have to say that even though the year is different, the locations are different, some of the catchphrases are different, that maybe, just maybe, some of the issues that, you know, women have addressed forever and a day are still being addressed in this book. But still, if you want to see how, if you're from my generation, baby boomer generation, and you want to see how a younger generation is addressing some issues that have faced Black women for a long time, I encourage you to read Bitches the New Black. And let's see, it's by Helena Andrews. And share your point of view. If you have read this book, if you are familiar with this writer, again, please give us a call at 503-231-8187. Okay, well, first of all, co-host Emma Jackson Ford has joined us. Hi, Emma.
Good morning.
Good morning. I'm also told that we have someone named Edie on the line. And since someone has accepted our invitation to call in, I certainly want Edie to join us. Good morning. Welcome to Black Book Talk, Edie.
Thank you very much. I didn't get the whole invitation to call in on books because I was just switching channels. So if the book that I recommend is inappropriate, I won't take it personally. I just returned the Midland Library a book that was a part of their book talk about an African-American who had lived in the 1800s, the 1900s, the first few years of the 2000s. And what I loved about the book was that it gives a historical perspective that maybe folks might not know, particularly whites, that younger blacks may not appreciate or understand, and that every human being can benefit because of that solid integrity with which he lived his life, where he realizes things are grossly unjust. That's the way things are. He deals with it. He doesn't whine or wimp. He's a prayerful, spiritual-minded man without imposing that on someone else. Makes the best of things, uses a work ethic, and then paves the way for others who could, and with the foundation that he built, be more radical and use other approaches of social change and personal transformation while being the role model of decency that the folks need. And the book is of a man that learned to read at age 98. The man and co-author is George Dawson, D-A-W-S-O-N, and I don't remember now the white English teacher from Washington State that was co-authoring or interviewing him for that. But George Dawson, and the name of the book is Life is So Good, and whether we're male or female, black, white, rich, poor, we can all do with some of the character strengths and the role modeling that he gives us.
I have seen that book. I have heard about that book. I'm so glad that you read it and enjoyed it. Would you give us the title again?
Life is So Good. And one of the things that I would like to recommend while I'm on the radio, thanks for your patience so far, is that the Multnomah County Library is having books that people kind of all read together, not just like the Less More series he did a while ago. And then it's books to action, where you read the books, you can have a book talk, but you also have coordinated times, maybe hands-on or on Portland or something, where or a list of organizations, right? The next book is Calf the Sky, Turning Oppression into Opportunity for Women Worldwide. And then all these opportunities to connect with different nonprofit groups to do your part in your personal transformation and social change to remedy the issues that are brought up.
Okay, I thank you for mentioning it. Now, I probably wouldn't have said it first because I work for the library and don't want to appear to just be promoting my organization. But since you have opened the door, yes, most of the what's now 17 branches of Multnomah County Library do have what are called page-turner book clubs. And they usually meet monthly, and some branches have more than one. And they just discuss books of interest. And I would encourage people to go into your local library, pick up a listing of library activities, see when the page-turner group is meeting again, because this is the time of year when they are making decisions about what the groups are going to read next year. And so,
well, I you love know, especially for those who aren't that much interested in reading or book clubs, is the action piece. The individually and collectively, with a scheduled time and group or with a list of groups that we independently go through, we don't just read about it, but we do something about it.
Okay, right. I'm familiar with that too. But talk a little bit more about that. Give an example of something that's come out of this of one of these groups.
On the book on George Dawson, Life is So Good,
mm-hmm.
they were coordinating preparing books that would be given to adult literacy programs.
Oh, great.
People
okay.
get together and clean and fix books, donate books, and maybe volunteer as reading literacy tutors, et cetera. Half the Sky is they're kind of waiting for that coordination with Hands on Portland,
mm-hmm.
which would have actions that people can unite in and supporting local women serving, you know, Justice for Women, Portland organizations.
Okay, well, thank you very much for calling in and sharing this with us, Edie.
Thanks.
Happy to have you as a listener. Okay. Hey, Emma.
Hi. Just before I tuned in, you were talking about the Henrietta Lack book?
Had not really said that much about it yet.
Okay.
No. Okay, but you know, I just think based on Edie's call, that's a perfect segue. So why don't you introduce it and say what you have to say, and then I'll chime in because I'm real enthused about that right now.
No, I was just saying, I was going back to where we were before our caller called in.
Okay, I'm sorry. I'm getting old and I'm just losing my mind. I didn't remember saying anything about it. But in terms of books that lead to action, The Immortal Life of Henrietta Lacks, which I think we might have at least mentioned on this show before, is a book that I think, honestly, everybody in Portland must be reading or trying to read. About a week and a half ago, I checked, and there were 390 holes on 78 copies of the book in the Multnomah County Library system. But, I mean, it's a great book, and what is really exciting to me in terms of books that lead to action is that the African American Alliance hosted a discussion of this book a week before last. Wonderful turnout, very varied audience. And they went from and this was the health subcommittee of the African American Alliance, went from just a discussion of the book per se to talking about health issues in the African American community and action steps that really anybody could take. And a lot of the health issues that were being discussed were ones that anyone could take. So that was very exciting to me to see how a book could change your life. And for those of you who are not familiar with this, The Immortal Life of Henrietta Lacks is the story of an African-American woman in Baltimore, Maryland, who died of cancer. Cells from her body were taken, and they were the first, quote-unquote, immortal cells. I mean, these cells multiplied more rapidly than anything else that had been seen. They endured through time, through everything, and these particular cells, the HeLa cells, for her first and last name, have been the basis of a multi-billion-dollar pharmaceutical and medical industry. And unfortunately, her family didn't know about it, and her family, for most of the time, and I'll be curious to know more about this, they did not make any money. These are people whose mother's cells were saving other people's lives. They could barely afford insurance. And most of them had serious health issues. So it was a good discussion, and I think people went away from there charged up and feeling like they were going to do things for themselves, for their health, for their friends and family's health, for the community's health. So that was very exciting. And Emma, I know you were there that evening, so if you want to add anything to that.
I thought that it was one of the best attended book club evenings we've had.
Absolutely. And also, for those who are interested, Rebecca Skloot, who is the author of this book, is in town this evening. She's going to be at the Baghdad Theater. I want to say 7 o'clock. I could be wrong about that. So you might want to call the Baghdad and double-check the time. But she will be there as a part of a program co-sponsored by Powell's Books, I believe, and I know OMSI, or the Science Museum. And because she is, in fact, a scientist, she'll be talking about that aspect of the book and her writing. But I think she is so worth seeing if you can get to see her this evening at the Baghdad Theater.
A lot of the people there at the book club told their personal stories.
Yes.
And they had a lot of helpful hints to for other people who might be experiencing difficulties medically.
It was one of those books change lives moments. And if there's somebody out in our audience who is listening who has read a book by a Black author or about African Americans that would illustrate that same point, again, do call us at 503-231-8187. You're listening to Black Book Talk on KBOO Portland. But Emma, you have another book you want to talk about.
Well, of course, because my books here are children's books, I couldn't find anything in the same genre. So I found something sort of close to it. Grandpa is Everything Black Bad. This book is by Sandy Lynn Holman, and it's illustrated by Lila, I'm thinking her name is pronounced Comintiana, but I'm not sure. This book is written by a counselor at a university, and this is what she says in the front of the book. This struck me. When I was young, I was told that very old people and very new people had something special in common. They are both very close to heaven. The new and very young have just come from heaven, and the very old are soon to return. Grandpa, Is Everything Black Bad? Is a special story about that unique relationship between the old and the young. And then she has it in bold, and it's like in maybe a 26 font type size. All parents should read this book to their children. And then she goes on to say, this is a very, very special book. It is not just a kid's book for Black children. It is a precious lesson for everyone. All parents should read this story to their children. Older children should read this story to younger children. And she goes on talking about why. But here's an excerpt from the book. Grandpa, is everything black bad? It's dark, black and scary in my bedroom at night. So I hide under the covers. When Dad turns out the light. I like watching TV, and sometimes I'm sad because most white things are good and most black things are bad. People wear the color black when someone dies. They look very sad and have tears in their eyes. Grandpa, is everything black bad? Grandma says hide in the bush when a black cat walks by because they bring bad luck to those that they eye. Aunt Barbara says my skin is darker than most others. She calls me the black sheep of the family because I look different from my brothers. I saw a fire burning in the forest one day. It made the trees turn black and the animals run away. Grandpa, is everything black bad? And we discussed this idea at school, among the teachers and among the students in the classroom. It's an interesting exploration of that whole concept of whether black is always bad. The book is called Grandpa, Is Everything Black Bad? It's by Sandy Lynn Holman, and it is published by the Culture Co-op.
Okay, what age group is it directed towards, Emma?
Well, she thinks that it's a good book to be read to children. I have fourth graders here this year, and this is a book that sparked discussion among us. So So I'd say at least up to fourth grade.
Good, good. I'm just thinking that ideas about color and beauty and what is valuable are ingrained so early. And that whole study that was done of little black girls and dolls and what dolls they thought were good and what dolls they weren't were bad. I think the first time it was done was in the 50s. And these little girls chose white dolls. And then they redid this. I can't remember if it was the 90s or the early 2000s. And unfortunately, little black girls still, in many cases, chose the white dolls. And when asked why, they just said, they were saying which doll is the good doll and which doll was the bad. And they still chose the white doll, which says that the messages that are being sent to little black girls and absorbed by children in general is still, yeah, that dichotomy of it. If it's black, it must be bad, and if it's white, it's right. And I remember during the, gosh, I guess the 70s, late 60s and 70s, during the whole Black is Beautiful movement, that people thought that, you know, when people pushed back against these stereotypes of anything black being bad, that people were being oversensitive and excessive. But when you see the results of it, you know that, no, it's true. It's a valid issue to be addressed, that there is still this concept that, you know, angels are white, devils are black, or whatever, that there is something wrong with being black or being darker. And it's real interesting. This is something that came up. It's in the book, and it came up in the conversation with Avell Gordley, who was discussing her book at Powell's earlier this week. And in the book, she talks about, you know, self-esteem issues that she had, and the fact that a part of this was the sense that skin color does matter. I'm going to try to find that excerpt. Okay. Let's see something. And the book is called Remembering the Power of Words by former senator and now Professor Avell Gordley. And in an excerpt talking about her early childhood, she says, extremely important to me was finding language to discuss taboo subjects like skin color and hair texture. In Black studies, these subjects actually came up in our classes. One professor asked us students, does skin color matter in the Black community? And how does that issue get talked about in the Black community? I remember a huge discussion around skin color and my relief at being able to discuss color consciousness. I was able to make much clearer connections about assumptions I'd grown up with, like my mom's light skin and features and how she was always talked about as a beautiful woman. In Black studies classes, we analyzed how these judgments get played out in the community at large. So in a historical sense and also in a personal sense, I connected historical references to darker-skinned women as being less than or part of a certain social class and women with lighter skin as part of another social class. I now understood that these judgments were tied to real status issues like club memberships and other social privileges. So this is still a very real issue in the African-American community. And actually, not just the African-American issue. It's an issue in the world at large. If you talk to people from Africa, you will find that, you know, that there are people from the East African area, from Ethiopia and Somalia, whose features are perhaps closer to Europeans, who in some cases feel a certain superiority in their appearance to, say, Africans from Ghana or Kenya, who have more of what we would traditionally think of as African features. If you think of, what is it? There's a film that, okay, I'm going to blank out on his name. He is an extremely well-known African-American filmmaker and director. And in this film, there are two Italians who are talking, and one of them makes a reference to the fact that one of the Italians was much darker, the implication being that he had African blood, and he was very upset. So, I mean, this whole thing is played out throughout the world. So I'm glad that this book is there and being read to our children, and I absolutely am delighted that Avell Gordley has written her life story, and I hope that Remembering the Power of Words will be a book that's read. You know, we want to have her on our show next month. Don't wait. Get the book and read the book. And if you hear that she's going to be speaking somewhere soon, go and hear her, because she is a person of such integrity, such eloquence, and really just such just deep humanity and goodness. I have to admit, I'm a big fan of Avell's. I have been before this and even more so because of the book. Let's see. We're coming down to the last few minutes of the show. Emma, got another book you want to share?
Well, I was going to say contributing to what you were saying is I'm a great fan of AVAIL, too, of course. But this has been a really wild week here in that everything has fallen together as far as what I wanted to teach. Our story in our reader this week is My Brother Martin, mm-hmm. written by Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s sister, Christine King. And so in trying to explain to the students about slavery and segregation and how was a long journey to get to where we are now, it's been interesting, all the stories and that I've had to tell them and all the questions they've asked me, because I have made an assumption that from kindergarten on, they have had some sort of teaching or learning each year about it. But we're falling down on the job. So my 1 week is now going to be extended to 2 weeks of working on the same story so we can talk more about this.
Good.
So there is a book called Bessie Smith and the Night Riders. Mm-hmm. It's by Sue Salter, and it's illustrated by John Holyfield. Beautiful, beautiful illustrations. It looks sort of like a chalk drawing. Mm-hmm. And, of course, Bessie Smith was a famous African-American female singer, and she wore beautiful colors and had a great from-the-belly kind of sound where you knew she was singing her all whenever she sang.
Oh, this is going to be a beautiful memory for people to take away from this in our last 30 seconds. I'm sorry, go on.
Like I said. Well, I will just say that this book is called Bessie Smith and the Night Riders. It's by Sue Stoffscher, and it's illustrated by John Holyfield. Excellent book to share with your children or with your students. If you're doing something, and it's by the Putnam and Sons.
Okay.
Publishing.
This is the April edition of Black Book Talks. Thank you all for joining us. We will see you again in May. This is Patricia Welch signing off. And, I think Emma's signed off already. All right.
No,
see you next
I'm
month.
Right here. Oh. And this is Emma Jackson Ford, Bookwoman. I was still looking in the book.
This is the KBOO Community Calendar for Thursday, April 7th. The Multnomah Bar Foundation and Elders in Action invite